Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks for joining me. We have a special hour of programming for you. Last week, I had the pleasure of moderating an event in the green space. It was an intimate evening of conversation and performance by Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Turisi in celebration of their new release, There Is No Other. Rhiannon Giddens is an acclaimed singer-songwriter, a banjoist, a fiddle player, and a founding member of the Grammy Award-winning Carolina Chocolate Drops. She released a solo album last year called Freedom Highway, a collection of songs inspired by slave narratives. Here she is performing at the Purchaser's Option from that album.
I've got a babe, but shall I keep him? 'Twill come the day when I'll be weeping.
Rhiannon Giddens received a MacArthur Genius Fellowship in 2017 for her work in, quote, reclaiming African-American contributions to folk and country music and bringing to light new connections between music from the past and present. There Is No Other, which was released last Friday, set similar intentions, though in this case, rather than connections between past and present, the songs represent musical connections across regions and continents and celebrate their commonality of the human experience through music. It also explores ideas of otherness, borders, blackness, pain, oppression, and hope. In all of the songs, including the first track on the album, 10,000 Voices, you can hear the influence of African and Arabic music and the unique instruments Rhiannon and Francesco use to make this piece of work. Here is Rhiannon Giddens and the multi-instrumentalist, composer, and Rhiannon's collaborator on this album, Francesco Turisi. Over the next hour, you'll hear them perform and hear us chat. They began with a performance of the song, 10,000 Voices.
Choices.
Thank you.
Your talent just is so stunning, and it really does transport. So thank you for
that. Thanks
thank
for saying that.
How did you two meet?
I came across the Chocolate Drops, and at the time I was researching a lot of early history of jazz, and I was thinking, wow, black string band, nobody talks about this, you know, in the history of jazz, and seemed to me like the missing link, you know, connecting things. And blah, 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 let's cut the story short. Only a few years later, I realized that I was living in Ireland at the time, I realized that Rhiannon was connected with Ireland, and through a common friend, cellist Kate Hellis, who also plays in the record in a few tracks, she had done a recording session with Rhiannon. I'd seen a photo she had posted with her on Facebook. I said, oh, you know Rhiannon, you know, do you have her contact details? Because I have this idea. I had this idea about this sounds, you know, Mediterranean frame drums and her sounds, you know, all the early banjos. And somehow in my head, this made sense. So I wrote to her and I said, hey, I've got this idea. Do you want to get together and play? And she didn't reply, of course. And I was like, fair enough, you know. She's busy, I know she's busy. It's like, I'm going to give it a second chance, you know. Then if she doesn't reply, I leave it. So I tried the second time, and she replied this time. And she said, yeah, this sounds cool. Let's get together.
And we managed to get a jam. This was 4 years ago. We managed to get a jam together. It was awesome. We recorded it. It was really cool. And then years passed before we could make anything happen, you know, because the scheduling was just not happening. And so we reconnected, you know, we didn't see each other again. I just every once in a while email, can you do this? No, okay. And we reconnected in the fall of 2017. And it was immediate, like, oh, okay, we started it a few years ago, but now we should actually continue this. Let's do something with this.
When you first heard Francesco's proposal, what was appealing about it to you?
Well, it was just kind of like, for me, it was taking me out of America and the Americas, because that's the focus. You know, I've been very, very focused on the history of American music and where African American and the Creolization of American culture stands within that. And for me, it was a chance to look outside of that and to kind of go, oh, this has actually been going on for a lot longer. You know, life doesn't start with the transatlantic, you know, slave trade. There was a lot of stuff going on before then, and it's actually a setup for all the things that kind of followed. And then musically, realizing how easily these instruments work together, and then the more digging into the history, realizing why that is, which is, you know, dealing with migration patterns and how a lot of these instruments all come from the same place, and you know, just a long time ago and far, far away, but these elements are still part of the instruments, you know, that started off, you know, in that common, sort of common well.
The name of the album is There Is No Other, and I think once upon a time that would have been a lovely sentiment, like, there is no other. But in these stressful times, it has another meaning.
Yeah.
Please share the meaning of the title of the album and how the theme of the There Is No Other is woven through the songs.
Well, it's one of the reasons why it's capitalized the way it is, which is only O was capitalized in the title. Because I wanted to really make sure that was, you know, the version of that phrase that you took away from it. And, you know, the tune that we played at the end of 10,000 Voices is called There Is No Other. It's the title tune. And for me, it kind of represents, you know, the spirit of the record. It's like you have, that's a minstrel banjo, replica of a banjo from the 1850s, and then you have frame drum from the Mediterranean, and they were magically kind of, they went together. When I wrote that tune, we were just playing together, and the tune happened, and I couldn't tell in the middle of it who was playing what sound. Wow. You know, and I went, okay, this is something big, you know. And, well, to me anyway. And it's kind of the soul of the whole idea, that they're thousands of years apart, but they're not, you know, and that we all have varying ways of expressing ourselves, but we're expressing the same stuff, no matter where we come from, no matter who we are. There's a commonality of the human experience that, you know, we can find way more in common than we, you know, do apart. You know, it's not to say that diversity is not a thing, it is, but we're still expressing the same stuff, just in different ways, you know. So that was kind of the notion. I mean, it all started with the music, you know, and the connection that we found.
Yeah, and I mean, also there is interesting ideas with the roots of the instruments. You know, for me, the first time I heard the minstrel banjo, to me, it resonated almost like an oud, you know, which is the Arabic lute, because it's fretless, it's gut strung, you know, and it comes from similar region of the world, you know, like a lot of the Western African lutes possibly share also common ancestry with dude, you know. So if you go and dig, there are also reasons why some of the things work well together.
Right.
You know, it's like a lot of them came by instinct, but I think it's because we carry this baggage of experiences of having played all these different styles and different instruments. So we hear a sound and we think, oh, this is cool. This sounds really good. But then when you kind of dig into it, sometimes you also find a reason for that.
Yeah.
You know, things are connected.
Well, we'd love to hear another song, but let's introduce the gentleman behind us.
Yeah, he's going to be playing on this next song.
Yes.
His name is Jason Cypher, and we've been playing together for a long time. So this is a song I heard, the first version I heard was by Nina Simone. She's somebody who's inspired me a lot, but it's by Oscar Brown Jr. I don't really think it needs much introduction.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. This is a special hour of programming on All of It. My conversation with folk artist Rhiannon Giddens about her new work, There Is No Other. It was a collaboration with the Italian multi-instrumentalist, musician, and composer Francesco Tarisi, and was recorded in front of a live audience in the green space. Just before the break, you heard Rhiannon and Francesco perform their rendition of the 1960 Oscar Brown Jr. song, Brown Baby. It was a song Nina Simone performed and tells the story of a parent or a family's hope that their brown child will grow up in a world more accepting and equal and freer than theirs. That song melded into Rhiannon and Francesco performing Briggs 4-0, an African-Irish-Brazilian-inspired tune featuring Francesco on the accordion. Let's pick it up from there.
That set in particular, you know, really represents the collaboration that we have found, because the first tune is a tune from a banjo tutor that was published in 1855 by Thomas F. Briggs, and it was the first banjo tutor. It was basically as soon as white people, you know, picked up the banjo, then you got to put it into dots, and you got to make a thing. But I'm glad that they did, because now I can look at it and learn these tunes, because this is the first sort of generation now of people who are learning the banjo who are learning from sheet music, you know, rather than from somebody, you know, a person, you know, because those first generation of white banjo players obviously would have all learned from black people, because that's the only people who played the banjo before this time. And so you start getting people, I want to learn that. So Briggs published this book. And the thing about these tunes is that you know, they really show this, I mean, you really hear Africa, you hear Ireland, you hear, it's like, it's this really very American feel that has been sort of stamped out of banjo music, you know what I mean? Other influences have come into banjo music, and it's gone a different road. When you hear these really early tunes, especially on a replica minstrel banjo like I have, when I play those tunes on a regular banjo, it sounds totally different, because the give of the gut strings and the, you know, the skin head, all of that is in there, you know? And so I learned, I was playing this tune for Francesco, and he said...
Well, I thought that some of the rhythm was very similar to some music I heard in the northeast of Brazil. It's a style of music called forró, and somehow that resonated with me. It's a very accordion-driven music, so I just picked up the accordion and we started jamming a little bit, and the grooves seemed to fit together. And then, I don't remember how it happened, but I started playing the tune, which is a composition by Hermeto Pascoal, who is a great Brazilian. You all know Hermeto Pascoal? Yeah. Yeah. He's an amazing Brazilian, crazy guy, a multi-instrumentalist composer, and so we just made this blend of these two tunes, you know. The tune is called Forró Brasil, actually not very original, but somehow fit together with Briggs, so we call it Briggs Forró.
And it's kind of also tying in, you know, the fact that there was actually, you know, it's not just American music and South American music. There's actually all these connections, you know, from one continent to the other, or one, yeah, the continents? I don't know. Anyway, I think they are.
And yeah, I mean, especially in the north of Brazil is interesting, because the main rhythm, this Baião rhythm, is like doom doom chicka doom doom, which is a rhythm that you find everywhere else in North Africa, you know, and they play an instrument called Zabumba, which looks very much like the Davul, which is, a Middle Eastern drum. So there is some Arabic influence also in parts of Brazil, you know? So again, just tying in all these different things that we try to find, so.
Just groove is universal.
That's well, for sure.
There's that, right? That's for sure.
Find the groove. Joe Henry produced this record. Joe Henry's a great performer in his own right? Love Joe Henry. It was interesting. He said about you and this project that you had a vision you had for yourself. Mm. How did Joe help you realize that vision? What did he do as a producer?
Well, he did a lot, because when Francesco and I first started kind of finding these sounds, you know, we did a couple of iPhone demos, you know, and I was just like, I really think this is my next thing. I really feel like that. But it's kind of like sometimes you think you know it's you think it's good, but is anybody else going to think it's your thing? And so I sent these to Joe, and it was really his enthusiasm that kind of gave me the juice to keep going. Like, he was just like, yes, this is it, this is the next thing, oh my god, this is it, you know. And I was just like, Joe and I have known each other for a long time, and I really, really respect him, like, so much. And I was just like, man, if he's saying that, then, you know, I'm gonna listen to that, I'm gonna listen to me, and then I'm gonna listen to him listening to me, and you know. And so then when it became a thought of recording, I mean, his was the first and last name. I was just like, obviously he has to be a part of this project, because he already is, you know. And so he brought Ryan Freeland, who he's his kind of regular collaborator in terms of an engineer, who Ryan's amazing, he's a genius. And you know, the two of them came to Ireland, and it was really a kind of a record of partnerships, you know. We were recording things together live in the studio, no isolation booths or anything, just one big
like
room,
this kind of distance, yeah. Literally with nothing in
no
between.
Baffling. There was no wall, you know, no big foam walls or anything like that. And I was singing and playing at the same time, and Francesco was, and we're all, you know, we just cut the songs like that. You know, even when we overdubbed together, you know. And so Joe and Ryan are in the control booth, like, doing their thing, you know, and Joe really helped shape which songs we were going to do. But then knowing when to get out of the way is also a big talent, you know. And Joe is very good at both. He knows when his input is really necessary, and then when he just needs to step back and let things happen. And it was a really intense, it was like 4.5 days we did 16 tracks, and it was some of them were just one the first take from beginning to end.
There's no clean starts in any of the takes.
No.
When we were listening back, this was like we're chatting like this, boom, and then it starts, you know. And they managed to take out most of it. I think it's Brown Baby that starts.
There's
that
one.
I go,
yeah.
How does this start? And you go,
I don't know.
And it's so close that I couldn't take it off, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was very funny.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But that was the spirit we were in.
It
was
but
just
it
like,
felt right.
Yeah.
It feels right.
We're just in this river. That was they really allowed us to really fully be in the river.
It does sound like that analog experience was really, really important to you. And really sort of is part of what this project is about. I almost can't imagine it being you guys in different recording booths on different days and overdubbed and
no,
I mean the thing about this is that the molecules in the air that are also part of this, you know. And so Ryan set up like 20 microphones, you know, and then he would just to capture the atmosphere, you know, and he would bring some up and bring some down, and you know, it was really, really caught the spirit also in the room. I feel as a part of the recording, which is I think really special.
Can we hear two more songs?
Yeah.
Excellent.
So speaking of Joe, this is a song. This is a song that I had written some years ago, and the verses were just not speaking to me. I was like, these verses really suck, but I like the chorus. So I just kind of sat on it for a while, and then I brought it to Joe, and I said, can you take a crack at these words? You know, just keep the chorus. And like 2 days later, he was like, what do you think of these? And I was just like, perfect. And so these are words by Joe and song by me. And we will stop after this one, before the next song, and then he can tell you what's going on with this drum. The curtain coming down, blue as black as warning, the silence like a sound that rattles at the cages that hold my heart and mind. They call my name to wonder just what I hope to find. That bird so high above the fray, what should he mean to me? His crooked song gone crazy, swaying arms of trees, and beat to me like the hungry, waiting for the tide. My tipping boat still moping, I might reach the other side. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm on my way. Lord, if you love me, keep me, I pray. A little bird is stretching out in the shimmering shade. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to a special hour of All of It, conversation with and performance by Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Torrisi. That was Rhiannon and Francesco performing the song I'm On My Way from their new album, There Is No Other. In addition to Rhiannon's haunting vocals, the song features Francesco playing a special Iranian frame drum called Adaf. Here's Francesco in his own words.
In case you were wondering what this drum is, it's a frame drum called Daf that comes from Iran. And it's got this particular thing that it's got this curtain rings inside. I mean, they're not real curtain rings. you'll believe it. No. It's a drum that is used in traditional music in Iran and in Central Asia, but also by Sufis for kind of trance dancing, you know. So it's got this, the rings basically create this splashy type of sounds, you know. They play it in a very intense way, like this kind of stuff. So it creates this real wash of sound, which is trance-inducing. And since we are talking about trance, maybe we should talk about the next song as well. Because Rhiannon accepted the challenge of learning some music from my side of the world, which is southern Italy. So she learned a pizzica. Do you all know what a pizzica is? some Italians in the room? Yes. A pizzica is a type of tarantella. You know what a tarantella is, right? Yes. Not the Godfather, the wedding scene, but... Well, kind of, you know. It's a little more complicated. I'll keep it short. But basically, tarantella, until fairly recently, was a form of trance dancing, healing trance dancing, you know. This was observed for the last time in the 1960s, by the way. If you got bitten by the spider, tarantula, hence the name tarantella, the only way to get better was to dance. So you get bitten, you fall into this kind of comatose state. Your family will call the doctors, the doctor would come, and out of the bag came the drum. So the doctor was a drummer and brought the whole band. They lived in your house and they played music until you were healed, which could take sometimes a week, 2 weeks. This is a very serious thing. It sounds funny. But anyway, so pizzica is a particular dance. Pizzicare means to bite. So the bite of the spider that comes from Puglia. So Rhiannon learned, not only learned it in a Puglian dialect, but also added the minstrel banjo, which has definitely never been heard in the in the pizzica world. So I'm going to play...
But, you know, those early minstrel tunes that I was talking about, there's the style and some of the techniques in that music that then died out in the what becomes clawhammer, you know, in like mountain music and what people might be familiar with. Some of those techniques actually worked really well with this, and we know that there were southern Italian drums, you know, like the tamburello, like that would have been involved in early minstrel music. So it's just very interesting, all these connections.
Yeah, tambourines and stuff. Anyway, I'm playing a tiny little tamburello. Traditionally, they're much bigger, but for this one, we use this tiny little one.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. This hour on All of It, we're bringing you a special broadcast of an event I moderated recently, an evening of conversation and performance in front of a live audience with Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Tarisi. You know Rhiannon from her work with the Grammy Award-winning Carolina Chocolate Drops and her more recent solo work. Francesco Tarisi is an Italian multi-instrumentalist, classically trained pianist and percussionist, and Rhiannon's collaborator on the new work, There Is No Other. I began the final portion of the evening asking Francesco what Rhiannon's superpower is as a musician.
You know, managing to dig up all this stuff, but somehow finding the essence of what is herself within them, if you know what I mean. It's like we're not trying to do an exercise in recreation, certain type of music.
Nobody needs that.
Yeah. There's plenty of people do that. You know what I mean? And I think that's a real important part of this whole process, you know, because it's like any of the one thing that we bring, you know, could take a lifetime to really do, master, you know. But I think we're trying to find something and make our own version of it, you know. So I think ultimately it's always very much 100% Rhiannon what you hear, you know. You don't hear like 20 different versions of things. You hear Rhiannon in all these different sounds that she can inhabit, you know.
Oh, shucks, guys.
Well, I'm going to ask you the same about Francesco. Well, what is his superpower?
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why our collaboration is so immediate and obvious, is because I think it's very similar for him. You know, he's a trained, you know, conservatory pianist, you know, studied jazz, and then he was in the Netherlands, and there's this early music program that's very strong, and then he got really curious about improv, and then became probably the only double early music and jazz improv major of all time, and all, you know.
I used to run the jam session for 17th century music. I swear to God.
Right?
That's what they did back then, you know.
Yeah. You know, and not content to just stay on the piano, then he gets interested in the, you know, instruments from, you know, from his part of the world, and, you know, learns frame drums, which I don't know if you, you know, can tell, they're not easy, frame drums. Like, you have the way you hold them and all the balance and all that stuff. So it's just kind of like, but also finding his sound within that. It's like, we've had these conversations where it's like, well, maybe we should just focus on one instrument and get really good at it. And they're just like, nah. You know, because there is, I mean, that's, you know, we've been talking about this as well. You're talking about, we're taking instruments from different cultures, and it's like, you know, we're not trying to say that we're the I'm not trying to say I'm a banjo master. He's not saying he's a master of the deaf. We're, you know, we're finding ourselves through these instruments and finding the commonalities of them. So I think that's one of his superpowers, is that, you know, he takes all, I mean, his vast knowledge. Like, he's forgotten more than I'm ever going to know about music. I'm not kidding to you. But, like, being able to distill that then within the sound, and the sound is still first, you know, to have all of that brain power, but then still play with the heart and distill all of those things, I think is a really, really powerful thing.
Blushing.
Francesco, what's something that you took away from this experience that you think, you know what, you will use down the road, that will stay with you, that's not just going to stay within this project?
Well, I mean, what I said to Rhiannon quite early on, I said, this is really crazy, because I, for the first time maybe ever, am 100% myself. You know, because I've been so many, you know, I'm playing with a baroque band and I'm playing something that's more jazz. When I do my own projects, I always end up sitting at the piano because that's where I write music, you know. But over the years, I've collected these weird instruments and I was going, why am I buying this instrument? You know, what am I going to use it for? Well, I don't know. Who am I going to play with? And then there you go. It's all here. Everything, literally, I came to the studio with like a cartload of instruments, everything I own, literally. And they all somehow made, I don't know, I just felt like, there's such, for me, it's the space to be myself 100%. All of the sides of it, also the sides that I never understood, now they make sense.
Is there anything about the record, the release, that I didn't ask you that you think is really important, that you want people to think about, or was important in the making of it?
Well, I think one of the things that I also want to stress about it is that there's all sorts of barriers that are we're trying to sort of ignore with the record. There's two arias on it that I sang as a freshman or as a college student, you know, in the opera range. And we do in a vernacular voice and sort of with an improv accompaniment and more kind of a la, you know, Nina Simone when she is, I was actually inspired by her version of Black Swan from the Menotti opera, The Medium. And we do another one from from Carlisle Floyd's opera Susanna. And that's also something that we're trying to, you know, we're just saying it with the music, but it's also a point. You know, it's like there is no, there really shouldn't be a difference between these two art forms. They're borrowing from each other constantly. Like all classical music is always borrowing from the folk in the vernacular world and vice versa. And so it shouldn't matter.
In our last few minutes, can you play us out?
Yeah. I mean, I look at a lot of history and, you know, I've written lots of narratives based on slave, or songs based on slave narratives, and really dug into sort of not the nicest of times. And then there's what's going on now. It's been a rough few years. And there's what's going on in the near future with the environment, and it just kind of gets you down sometimes. But what I try to think about, this is just for me, this is how I'm trying to get through the day, is I think about like humanity, you know, and how we're full of extremes. You know, we paint the Sistine Chapel and we create the atom bomb, you know, and it's just kind of like there's a lot of area in between. And I like to sort of stay on the side of the Sistine Chapel personally, but I don't know. I just feel like, you know, as Francesco mentioned, like the whole universal, the universe thing, whatever it is for you, it's that thing bigger than ourselves. And that's what I find refuge in, you know. It's just the only, it's the only way I sleep. So this is a song about that. And I just want to say thank you for having us here. Thanks for the lovely interview. And, you know, yeah, that's it. Thanks.
When your path is full of worry, He will see you through. When you feel alone on your journey, He will see you through. Won't shine brighter than your soul.
lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.